The show is supported by you, the listener. Stick around till after the news to hear more. This is Cup of Go for April 5, 2024. Keep up to date with the important happenings in the Go community in about 15 minutes per week. I'm Jonathan Hall.
And I'm Shai Nechmad.
Hi, Shai.
Hello. I've sent you a link. Have you read it? No, you haven't, because it's a members-only story.
Yes.
Medium.
I hate Medium.
We found a really cool link we wanted to share with you, but someone posted it on Medium, and since we saw it, made a member-only story, which I'm fine with. If that's a good way for you to make money, go ahead and do that. But Medium has been bad for creators and bad for consumers and messes up SEO.
And it means we won't talk about your story on the show, except vaguely in like anonymous terms.
Yeah.
Like this.
When I did Medium before in a company, I also just published it on my own, like static site, free blog. And then if someone wants to support, they can sign up to Medium, unsubscribe from their emails, and keep reading your blog.
And just by the way, so nobody thinks we're picking on Medium per se. If you post a really great news story about Go behind any paywall, we're not going to talk about it on the show.
Unless there's, you know, a free
version. There's a free version as well that we can share with the audience.
Yeah, all right. So luckily, the Go forum, you know, the Go Google group is still not behind the paywall.
That's right.
So what have you seen there?
So we had a new security release this week. Go 1.22.2 and 1.21.9 were both released with a security release that I really don't know anything about. Have you looked into it, Shai?
Yeah, so I actually read the blog post by Bartek Nowotarski. I hope that's how that name is pronounced. Two blog posts. One, it just gives an overview. So the overview is there is a vulnerability in HTTP2 called continuation flood. And then on that, you know, blog, by the way, talking about it, a static blog, super simple theme, published for free. Bartek just gives the technical details, which I find super interesting. What do you know about HTTP2?
Not a whole lot. It allows for, like by default, a single TCP handshake with multiple requests over that open connection. Some prefetching is capabilities are in there. I don't know a lot about it.
I think a lot of people are in your position where they know it's like better-ish than HTTP1. But, you know, if I ask you, what do you know about HTTP1? You could probably whip up an implementation in like a few days that's passable.
I could probably whip up something that looked kind of like HTTP1 from memory.
Yeah, it's just been around so long. It's so ubiquitous. We've been dealing with it so much. Oh, yeah, of course. So the first line is a text line and then whatever. And then boom, HTTP2 is binary. It's not even text lines. It sends frames from one site to another. This vulnerability is a result of Bartek's work into looking into two specific types of frames. Some frames won't surprise you. Data, right? Or ping or headers. So these are pretty self-explanatory. There are some that are named really funnily to me, like push promise and go away, which are, as you can just imagine, you know, servers bickering.
Sounds like my three-year-old talking to me now.
Yeah. But the interesting one for this vulnerability is a combo of headers and continuation. So just to get Bartek's look on things, he's like, if you want to learn more, you can just read the RFC, which I respect. I respect. Reading an RFC once a month or so is what's keeping my mind sharp. And it also improves my technical writing. So I highly recommend it.
I see you're choosing RFCs better than I am.
Yeah. But I definitely haven't read the HTTP2 RFC. I'm not that hardcore anymore. Maybe when I was 18, I would have sat down and read it. But not now. Because now I have a beautiful podcast just streaming the information directly into my ears, which is what's going to happen right now. So what do you think happens in the headers frame?
I would imagine that you send some headers, some key value pairs of some sort.
Exactly. So you send the headers, they're packed using HPAC, and you just send them. And you can send them with some flags. Every frame has a flag, like a bunch of flags you can send it. One of them is end headers, which means, all right, I'm done sending all the headers. I think this is an audio medium, so this doesn't carry very well, but John has this like suspicious thin eyes where he's like, I think I know where this is going. The other type of frame is a continuation frame. It's very similar to the headers frame, but they just have one flag, which is end headers. So, you know when I finish sending you all the headers. And the case is, let's say I have a ton of headers to send, right? They don't all fit in within one frame. Let's say they are under the MTU or whatever. If headers exceeded a single frame, I can split them up to a frame stream. And the vulnerability is super interesting to me. It's just a sort of an edge case that I wouldn't think about ever. But the moment you say it, it's super obvious. It's continuation flood. What happens if I start sending headers, send continuation frames, but never set the end headers flag? So this was a vulnerability. It caused, at least in Go, it can cause CPU exhaustion, out of memory crashes, and, you know, just crashes even just a few frames into the flood. And unlike, you know, huge ping DDoSes, like distributed denials of service attacks, you can do this from a single machine. Like, you don't need a lot of machines pumping out tons of packets into a server to crash it.
Because the server loads all the headers into memory before deciding whether or not to accept or reject the connection and process it otherwise, right? So you could just generate random headers and send it without consuming memory on your side to the server, right? So you're still using network bandwidth, but you're not using local memory. You're only using server memory. Is that the idea?
Yes. And also, there's nothing... this is the most boring case. Actually, in Go, and we won't go into the code here because it's a little complicated to understand why it happens, which is, by the way, always where vulnerabilities hide. In these, like, oh, wait, what? It actually behaves like this. In Go, it causes CPU exhaustion, not a memory problem. There's a callback that checks something and, you know, only breaks if the headers have ended. And then you, like, read frames and you're stuck in a loop. And you can just cause a server to crash remotely by sending endless continuation frames. And again, this doesn't require, like, you know, a botnet of 50,000 machines, like, bombarding your... This is not something Cloudflare will block, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm sure they will, but this is a vulnerability and it was fixed. So I love the blog post. It's super well-written. It's short. Thanks a lot for Batek for finding this vulnerability. Just a huge shout out. By the way, I was surprised. How ubiquitous do you think HTTP2 is?
Well, I was going to say something about that. If you're not explicitly disabling HTTP2, you probably have it enabled without realizing it if you're running an HTTP service. Now, whether it's being used or not is another question, although I think it's used far more than we realize because...
For human traffic, it's 62%.
Yeah.
If you exclude bots, which I don't know if you should for this matter, but that's what the data Cloudflare gives, 62.2% of HTTP traffic is HTTP2. And, you know, this basically means that Bartek found and fixed a large part of the internet, which is not something a lot of people do. So shout out, man. I really, really love this blog post. We basically covered all of it other than actually reading the code, but I highly recommend you go read it for yourselves. And the releases just set a limit. They set a limit on the amount of excess header frames that they will process before closing a connection. The vulnerability is pretty simple. The fix is pretty simple. It was just devilishly hidden. And I think these are the hardest cases to find because they require very abstract thought and just looking at a thing and being like, wait, that's how it works. What about this case? I just really liked it. Usually when we talk about security releases, it's like, okay, another parser error in XML, like always, whatever. But I found this one super interesting. So I wanted to share it in detail. But as always, when we talk about security releases, the important point, other than learning about the vulnerability and perhaps preventing it in your own code, is, of course, you should update.
You should update.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an HTTP server running in production written in Go.
Probably so.
So yes. Perhaps doubly fast. So yeah, HTTP header vulnerability. In other news, dog bites man.
Well, we are halfway through our program and we've covered essentially one story, but a good one. Let's talk a little bit. Let's change gears a bit and talk about some conferences.
So there's a call for papers for Go West. Right?
Yay.
Isn't that a song? No, I think about it for a second. Go west. Dun, 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 dun. Go west. Dun, dun, dun. You know what I'm talking about? Go west. Where the skies are blue. Go
west. This is what we're gonna do. So Go West conference is happening in October TBD. The date isn't determined yet. I suppose they're looking for a venue. But even so, it's happening in October in Lehi, Utah. So if you're in that part of the world or want to be, here's your chance to submit a paper. It's not a paper. It's a presentation. Call for presentations. That's what the P stands for, right?
I think it's still call for papers because the submission is a paper.
Okay.
But in reality, obviously, it's a call for PDF because the submission is a PDF.
Exactly. call for HTTP form data. Anyway, you can submit a proposal to speak at GoWest conference in October. Link is in the show notes, or you could probably Google it. We also have a bunch of other conferences coming up. We're not going to mention them all because there's too many to mention in one episode, but the ones coming up very soon, we have 42 coming up. This is an online conference, April 25th. So that's one for all of our listeners you could attend virtually.
Yeah, just 20 days from now. I would recommend just putting, you know, in your works calendar, all right, let's, you know, put it on, even in the background. The one talk I'm interested about from Conf42 is effectively onboarding and integrating new devs. This is not something people usually talk about, but I'm just curious. How did they, like, there's a whole track for culture, which is interesting, I think. So that's in 20 days, right?
20 days from now.
April 25th.
One other one that I want to mention today, well, I think we'll save the rest for another week. GopherCon Brazil is coming up. May 9 and 10. It looks like this is at least a dual language conference because they have a website in both Portuguese and one in English. But if you're going to be in Florianópolis, I hope that's how you say it, in Brazil, check that out. GopherCon Brazil, May 9 and 10.
Yeah, and if you like to plan out your year slightly more than advance, we'll keep mentioning these conferences as they come up. But there are a lot more, right? Taiwan, Japan, Berlin, Russia, London, Italy, all throughout the year. So we'll put the link to the GoWiki, which is where we have this information, and you should have it as well.
No proposals to talk about this week. We'll have some for next week. We are going to mention a couple bits from the community. One is a blog post continuing the theme of security. Chai, how would you prevent a password from being logged to your server logs?
So, you know, I just type out all my logs, you know, I just type them out manually into Datadog or Kibana as they come in from requests. I just wouldn't write it.
Yeah. So you see that, oh, there's a password. I'm going to skip over this part.
Don't you hear the typewriter in the background?
Yeah. Computer says no.
Totally. It happened to me in the past. So egg on my face. Implemented logging thing in my previous place and it logged every single field and I felt very smart about it, and then someone found their password in the logs and we had to do a whole thing, even though I was aware of this problem. I just didn't think about it at that context. How would you prevent it, or how have you prevented it in the past, I guess is a better question.
Yeah, there's a few different ways I've done it. I mean, the first thing most people do is they have their logging provider, Datadog or Sentry or whatever, just like filter out sensitive looking key names, which is, I suppose, better than nothing. But I don't trust that to do a good job. So I try to be a little more proactive. And some approaches I've taken are to encrypt everything that's not in an acceptable list.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, I don't usually want to log a password, even encrypted, but there are data I do want it to log, but I don't want it to be clear text, you know, maybe the response to an HTTP request or something like that might contain a credit card number or whatever, you know, but I can't know that a priori. So I'll encrypt that sometimes. But there's some other approaches. What does this blog post tell us to do?
So first of all, I want to shout out the blog itself. It's william.dev. We already mentioned William's blogs once in the past. It's like beautifully designed and has a really nice like panache to it, I think. I think we talked about it when we talked about URL parameters or something. I don't remember. But like last week when we talked about Go examples being executable in the browser, it has the Go thing in the blog post. So it's not just code. You can edit it, you can play around with it, and you can run it inside the blog post, which is very nice because you can see the example happening in real time where you print things you didn't mean to print, like a sensitive string. And then once, you know, we apply William's suggested fix, and then you run it, you see it being like, oh, redacted, which is very good. So the suggestion itself is also very, very simple, something I would happily introduce into every, you know, internal company style guide. And it basically boils down to whenever you have a data struct that you might log, implement the format function, which sort of implicitly means you re-implement the formatter interface and do the same for the log valuer interface, which means you just have to implement the log value function. This is for structured logging. And if you implement both of them and martial text, which means you'll be implementing at the text marshaller interface, you're covered from all angles. Because basically, there wouldn't, unless someone is, you know, going on purpose and doing reflection of every single field and printing it, you know, sort of by hand, you covered all the normal standard library, I guess, serializers. You mentioned you got format, you got log value, you got Marshall text. And most packages that deal with textual data should, in theory, look for these types and use these types to turn your types into text. And then when they try to log stuff in your implementation, you just hide the, you know, the secret things. Also, William recommends something that I think is very useful. When you mentioned encrypting, my first thought was, yeah, but how would I separate the encrypted data from like actual useful data in Datadog or whatever, CoreLogix? He instead says, replace it with a secret marker because you don't want to log these fields to start with, right? So if you put something like, you know, secret detected, ? Some weird parentheses, something that's super searchable and will never be a reasonable, valid value in your software, you can just set up an alert that will trigger every time you find this text anywhere in any of your logs, whatever. So you're covered from writing these values, but you'll also proactively detect places where you're inadvertently logging things you shouldn't have. So I really like this. It's useful. You can introduce it into most stacks pretty comfortably and provide a lot of value. The only problem is you have to actually go through every struct in your application and implement it.
I'll call out one other problem, and that would be if you need to use a JSON marshaller, for example, in other use cases. Like maybe you have a struct that you actually send to the end user or logged or to a database that you need that sensitive data persisted. Then you have to have two versions of the struct. You have to be careful which one you send to the log and which one you use elsewhere. So there could be some complications in that level of things. But still, yeah. I agree. Overall, it's a good approach.
So the only thing I'll say is if you need to send the password or whatever sensitive data exposed for these like three cases, for the first time you get it from the user and for the path it travels to your application all the way to the database or the third party, whatever, it's a good thing that this code will be the exception and will look exceptional. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to say in this case, I'll cast it to the sensitive data exposed data mm-hmm. struct, whatever, right? It looks like it's harder to work with, but it's simpler to prevent these errors. So it's a very good blog post. You can just click through the code examples and maybe, you know, if your company has various compliance frameworks it needs to adhere to, like PCI DSS or HIPAA or whatever, just dealing with sensitive data in the backend, I think this could be a super useful tool to add to your toolbox, much like William's other blog posts. Keep them coming, man. We love them. And we had one. If we just spread so much positivity, how about you take it down a notch and take us to the Reddit swamp?
So, yeah. I saw this post. I think I saw it yesterday on Reddit. It was also mentioned on our Slack channel.
Yeah, thanks, Peter.
But, I mean, this is worth mentioning because it's just a play out of the last year's Cup of Go playbook. The question is, if you could redesign Go from scratch, what would you change? And it's basically a repeat of our stumper questions from last year's interviews.
Yeah, we should probably do a supercut at some point of all the answers from all the guests and see how much they line up with this blog post.
The questions we asked our guests were, if you could take something out of Go, and if you could add something to Go, what would it be? And there's some good answers in this. The top voted one at the moment is there's too many ways to create a variable. And they show five. They aren't all identical functionally, but they're subtly different in some cases. But yeah, there's still five ways to create a variable. And knowing the difference between them and which ones are identical and which ones aren't is a little bit tricky.
And I just want to shout out the second top voted one, which is not having to use a magic date for time formatting in the standard library.
Somebody should create a proposal about that.
Yeah, so I actually wrote that while I agree the Go team won't relitigate. If you're wondering why we're laughing, you need to listen to the previous episodes. And also welcome, new listener. But we've been talking about this time formatting thing every episode, even though I haven't done a custom time formatting function once since we've started talking about it. So I guess we should stop. There were some other interesting things here. I think some of them are more like, I've been using language X and I like this feature, so I want to add it, which to me isn't strong enough. Like, don't use zero values, use option types instead. I'm like, a lot of the utilitarian nature of Go, which is I just want to be useful and simple and to the point, is based on zero values, right? And if you just take zero values out of the language, you have to change so many things. Many things, by the way, are I want to a linter for X And then someone replied, Linter already exists. Look at Nillaway or look at AirCheck.
Yeah.
And then people are like, yeah, but I want it built in. For that, it's worth remembering X and STD loop. If it exists in a third party and it works well, there's no reason to introduce it to the STD loop, at least in Go. Although some of them do make a lot of sense. Like AirCheck being by default, like part of Go Vet, for example, at least for me would make a lot of sense. Anything specific that you think is good enough to warrant a proposal and like actually starting to work on it?
I don't know. So I responded, and the things I mentioned were things that will not be, they will all be backward breaking changes, so they wouldn't be implemented.
Are you sure? Because I think there is a proposal to create pointer to a simple type.
Oh, so yeah. So that one, in fact, Rob Pike has even weighed in favor of that.
And also Siebes?
Yeah, many people have. I don't know why it's not done. But so for clarity, what I proposed adding was the ability to, in code, create a pointer to a concrete type. So the example I gave is at, quote, foo, end quote. And that's not legal right now because, quote, foo, quote, is not addressable. My proposal is that it would just create a variable of type string that has that value and then evaluate to a pointer to that string.
The problem with this sort of proposals is that it's obvious, I think, really, it's obvious that it should be part of the language. But since it wasn't, and since it still isn't, people can be like, it doesn't warrant a language change. Because it really, it's okay for you to write a one-liner function that does just that, right? It's not like a complex fill with edge cases function. It's super simple to write one.
Now that we have generics, it is super simple. It is a three-line function.
And it's really uncomfortable. You wouldn't import it from someplace else, right? You wouldn't write a package called pointer creator and then from pointer creator import. You wouldn't do that because it's just a one-liner, but you would write this.
I have done it within a package. I wouldn't import a third-party package for that, but like within a project, I would create a package. Usually call it PTR, and it has a single function called to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have a reverse that it does the opposite. You know, a dereference is a pointer or returns a zero value.
I think as you go along, you collect more and more of these helper functions that you're like, they're awkward to put in the language because they're too small to warrant a language change and updating the documentation and adding a new way to do things, which is the, going back to this Reddit thread, is the first suggestion, right? There are five ways to create a new variable. Theoretically, this is the sixth one. It's a pointer too, so it's not 100% the same, but it still could be confusing for someone who's just learning Go, and I don't know, Copilot will just assume that you want the pointer now, and they'll just tab away and continue working and not understand what they did.
Yeah, I think the strongest argument in favor of either a built-in or a standard library change for that is just so that there's fewer ways to spell pointer.to, because each project you work on is going to have their own way to do that, and that's just unnecessary, but we'll see.
Yeah, so there's an open proposal. You can go take a look at it. But actually, out of the most, you know, compared to most stuff I find on Reddit, this was an interesting thread. And it really did remind me of the questions we asked at the end of the episode. One thing that's, by the way, very much missing compared to early last year when we started this podcast and we asked people what to remove is generics. Nobody's talking about it. It's like, okay, it's fine.
I did see a very early comment was remove generics, but it got downvoted pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think people are happy with it.
And even I would have upvoted that a year ago, but now no. I've decided I like generics.
And there's one thing, it's the most downvoted comment on this thread, but I actually agree with it. I should probably not say this out loud, but bring back semicolons. Yeah. All listeners just threw their phones away.
Yeah, I think it's time to end this program. We've gone off the rails.
Yeah. Get out of here. Get out of my office. No daughter of mine will write code with semicolons. Some of my best friends write with semicolons. I just wouldn't want my daughter. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Stick around for the ad break to hear some more fun stuff that happened.
And some of the stuff I forgot last week when I did the ad break by myself.
I don't even know
what it was yet. I'll find out.
All right. Has this ever happened to you? You've been trying to use Go, but you don't know what to do. Cut to a 50s kitchen and like the sort of person trying to clean their laptop with a dish soap.
Yeah, yeah.
The laptop just falling all over and they're like, what do I do? Well, here's the solution for you. Welcome to Cup of Go. You can reach us at cupofgo.dev. That is cupofgo.dev. And you can talk to us at our Slack channel, over at the Gopher Slack. Our channel is named #cup-o-go. That's kebab case with hyphens. Cup-o-go. How was that? How was that for?
That was classy.
Yeah, like 4 a.m. you wake up, you turn on the television on like the sales channel. I don't know what it's called in the U.S. Some people are trying to sell you the steak
Shop
knives.
At Home Network, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, but wait, there is more. We wanted to shout out Software You Can Love, which is a conference that's going to happen in Milan, Italy. We didn't mention it during the episode because it's not strictly a Go thing. It's mostly focused on Zig, which I don't know if you've had ever played with. But, you know, we're super excited mostly because it's from one of our listeners. And we really wanted to shout them out. They're excited about it. So thanks, Claudio Beatrice, for your support. And yeah, it will all culminate in this Zig conference. They have some blog posts over both on Dev Community and Zig News about, you know, Zig and Go and how these two combine. I haven't played around with Zig yet.
I've done a bit of reading about it, but that's it. Yeah.
So if, you know, if you're looking for that kick into Zig and you're around Milan in late May, so feel free to join the Software You Can Love meetup. We'll put the link in the show notes. This is not sponsored, by the way. It's just something one of our listeners is doing, and we just want to support them doing it. They're not like paying us or anything. But Claudio, keep up the good work. The conference looks really good. It will also be live streamed on Twitch, which I don't know how I feel about, because I don't know if I'll watch a conference live. If I'm not going, I'll just watch it later. But it's a really cool thing to do. And if you go there, you get a programmable badge, which is nice. You can write Zig thing on your badge that you got.
Fancy.
Yeah, it looks well planned. We want to say thanks to all our Patreons for supporting this show. This is a hobby. Jonathan and I are doing this for fun and for the community in some way. But it is an expensive hobby. We pay for editing fees, hosting fees, I guess internet and stuff like that. But it's not free. And we really appreciate your support. It's $8 a month. And if you don't do it, it's also totally fine because we're not Medium and we'll give you the content because we like doing this. Finally, we introduced transcripts to our episodes. If you're a longtime listener or maybe a member of our Slack channel, you've seen this conversation pop up now and then where people try to transcribe the episodes. Actually, our podcast hosting software just made this super easy. So we were like, all right, let's jump on it and try to transcribe the episodes. They do it using AI, so there's some errors there. For example, they just can't figure out Shai Nechmad. It's just impossible for them. Jonathan Hall, for some reason, just goes down smooth. Yeah, totally. Not saying it's racist, but also not saying it's not racist. It's just the training data. Anyways, if we don't know if this is useful for you, because we obviously know what we said in the episode, we said it.
Maybe you know what you said in the episode.
But if this is useful for you, or you want us to keep doing it, just tell us in the channel.
Or you want a higher quality transcription.
Yeah, that's also.
if the AI is bad for you for some reason.
Yeah, we're fixing the obvious, like we're rolling through it, but we're not doing a deep, like it's not a manual work. Not yet, at least. If you say it's useful, then we might think about it. So the episodes have transcripts now. Check them out in your podcasting app or over on our site, kapago.dev, where you can just click on every episode and see them. I think that's it. That rounds it out. Share this episode with a coworker or a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. We don't pay to advertise, by the way. We're talking about the costs of the show. We don't pay to advertise, not a single cent. All this amazing growth and all the people who are listening and supporting and buying all the swag and whatever, it's all like word to mouth, just people, you know, sharing the show and being excited about it. And we really, really appreciate it. If you tweet about a show, if you share it with a friend or a coworker, that's basically our only way right now to expand our audience and just share all this Go News goodness with everyone.
Speaking of swag, you did forget something. So now we're even. We had somebody buy our first wireless charger this last week, and they posted an image of it on our Slack channel. I'm a little disappointed, though. It came with a wire. I thought it was supposed to be wireless, but this is Claudio Beatrice also, who told us about the upcoming conference you just mentioned. So
yep.
A double shout out to Claudio. Thanks for buying a wireless charger. Let us know how it works for you once you have a chance to give it a shot.
I mean, it's cute AF. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
If you just use it as a coaster, not even as a charger, that would be good.
We should totally make Brewster coasters. We should check and see if that's even possible. That would
Brewster
be great.
Brewster coasters. All right, adding to the to-do. And before I get even more tasks and the AI transcription has to transcribe even more of this nonsense, we'll wish you a happy and calm weekend. We'll see you next... Well, we won't see you. This is an audio program, but we'll catch you next week. This week, we don't have an interview for you, but next week, we actually have two, and two of them are very interesting. 100% hit rate. So I'm excited to talk to these interesting people, and you'll know who they are next week.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Till then.